Let's take a look at some of the yoga and mental health research related to depression. In the practice guidelines of the treatment of patients with major depressive disorder put out by the American Psychiatric Association, they identified best practice treatment in the acute phase of mild to moderate major depression as either including pharmacotherapy, so drugs, medication, psychotherapy, which is counseling, or a combination of both. For the psychotherapy component, they suggest cognitive behavior therapy, otherwise known as CBT, or interpersonal psychotherapy, IPT. So CBT, cognitive behavior therapy, focuses on the relationship between cognitions, emotions, and behaviors, and IPT, interpersonal psychotherapy, is focused on the role of relationships in mental health. What I find really interesting was that IPT, interpersonal psychotherapy, was actually designed as a control group in a research study. They actually didn't think it would work, but they found that this kind of therapy that focuses on relationships was just as effective as other types, and now it's a well-respected therapeutic modality. In the case of severe depression that is not responsive to pharmacotherapy, so medication or psychotherapy, counseling, is electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, according to the American Psychiatric Association. Yes, this is still done to this day. Other well-supported components of reducing depression include exercise, social connection, and relaxation, all of which you might notice can form part of a yoga practice or class. I know you're going to say that yoga isn't exercise, and yoga isn't at its essence an exercise program. We know that, even though it's often perceived that way. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that yoga can include an exercise component to greater or lesser degrees, depending on the capability, motivation, and preference of the individual. Likewise, relaxation can be included in a yoga class or program, and social connection can be fostered between the teacher and the student, and between students in the class. Let's take a look at this study now called Meditation with Yoga, Group Therapy, and Hypnosis and Psychoeducation for Long-Term Depressed Mood, a randomized pilot trial. These researchers investigated the effects of a meditation and hatha yoga intervention in a small randomized controlled trial with 46 participants diagnosed with long-term low to moderate levels of depression. So, a randomized controlled trial is the gold standard for this kind of research. It means that participants were randomly allocated to the different groups. In this case, a yoga group versus a psychoeducation control group, a group where they were given psychological education but no yoga practices. The range of diagnoses in this study include dysthymia, and we know that in the DSM-5, this is now called persistent depressive disorder, major depression of 2 years or more in duration. Double depression, which is dysthymia or persistent depressive disorder with a superimposed major depressive episode, or a major depressive episode in partial remission. Individuals were excluded from the study if they had current bipolar disorder, psychotic features, past or present psychosis, a current primary diagnosis of panic disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, current drug dependence or abuse, current suicidality or previous attempts, a significant medical condition, current participation in psychotherapy or a meditation group, or had started or changed prescribed antidepressant medication or St. John's wort in the previous 3 months. That's a lot of exclusions, isn't it? This means that the selection criteria is pretty narrow, which is a classic in research. They narrow down the range of diagnosis, which makes sense in many ways. So they control many factors and isolate the effects of the practices. But it's also pretty artificial, as we know that comorbidity is more common than not. The meditation and hatha yoga intervention followed the Inner Resources program developed by one of the authors, which included guided group practices in meditation, focused on surrendering and letting go of thoughts, feelings, and sensations as they arise without pushing them away or engaging with them, as well as hatha yoga, breathing techniques, guided breathing imagery, For example, imagining the lungs are two balloons being filled with air, mantra repetition and psychoeducation, and also a discussion on how to apply these practices to mood management. The program included 8 weekly 2-hour group sessions, 1 4-hour retreat, and a booster session in week 12. The researchers found that 77% of participants in the yoga group achieved remission, meaning that they no longer met the diagnostic criteria for depression at the 9-month follow-up period, compared to 36% of those in the psychoeducation-only control group, which they found was statistically significant. Therefore, it can be concluded that yoga was more effective in reducing long-term depression for this group than psychoeducation alone. Now, that's pretty awesome, especially given the relatively small sample size in the study. The sample size is taken into consideration when testing for statistical significance, so the results need to be pretty exceptional to reach statistical significance with a smaller research population. All right, let's look at another study. In this research, Kinsler and colleagues looked at the effect of an 8-week yoga intervention in a small randomized control trial. The paper was titled Feasibility, Acceptability, and Effects of Gentle Hatha Yoga for Women with Major Depression, Findings from a Randomized Controlled Mixed Methods Study. Their focus was women diagnosed with major depressive disorder, or dysthymia, which you might remember is now called persistent depressive disorder, and is long-term, low-level depression that lasts for at least a couple of years. The exclusion criteria included suicidality, psychosis, mania, physical conditions making yoga difficult, changes in antidepressant medication in the past month, regular yoga practice longer than 1 month within the past 5 years, and non-English speaking. 27 participants enrolled in the study, however, only 18 participants completed it. The yoga intervention included a once weekly 75-minute group class and daily home practice with a yoga DVD and handouts, all of which were suitable for what they call yoga naive individuals, people who hadn't practiced yoga before. The program lasted for 8 weeks, and the yoga practices included gentle asana sequences, pranayama, intention setting, yoga nidra, and relaxation in shavasana. In the classes, participants were reminded to modify or stop any poses or activities that were uncomfortable or to try something new. Participants in both groups, the 8-week yoga group and the 8-week psychoeducation health and wellness control group, both showed a significant decrease in levels of depression, anxiety, and stress following the 8-week intervention. While there was no statistically significant difference between the effects of the yoga intervention and the health and wellness program on levels of depression, anxiety, and stress, the participants in the yoga group showed significantly less rumination compared to the control group, indicating that yoga appeared to be particularly helpful in reducing rumination. It's interesting, right? In a separately published paper titled A Feeling of Connectedness, Perspectives on a Gentle Yoga Intervention for Women with Major Depression, the same authors conducted semi-structured interviews with 12 of the participants from the earlier study. In these interviews, 3 dominant themes arose. Firstly, that their experience of depression was one of persistent negative thinking or rumination and stress. Secondly, that yoga was beneficial as a self-care technique that helped them to learn methods for coping with stress and rumination, gave them a sense of empowerment and competence, and promoted self-acceptance. One participant reported, "It helps more with my mood and my thoughts. I don't have as much pressure when I'm in class. When I'm in the real world, there's a lot going on. In a yoga class, I don't have stress. I'm good." Another participant said, "I got to have a deeper connection, mostly with myself. In yoga, the teacher said to get to know your body, what it needs today. That is really what yoga is about, helping your own body. I got to know what my body needed." And thirdly, the participants in the study consistently commented on the effect that yoga had on reducing their sense of isolation, as it allowed them to get out of the house, gain a sense of connectedness with others, have a shared experience with others, and have a positive experience in a safe space with other participants. One participant said, "Showing up was good for me. Going somewhere without my husband was helpful for me. He would offer to drive, but I could say, I think I can do it. Actually going and doing that was what's good for me." Another participant said, "We were all nervous, kind of like the first day of school, but the teachers were so welcoming and they created an environment where it was okay to make a mistake. So we all kind of relaxed and were able to work together as a group. It was a very positive social experience for something that is normally very anxiety provoking for me." I love how in the study they include quotes from their students. It enables us to get a real feel for the students' experience of yoga rather than just the statistics. So let's look now at this study by Gemma Perry and colleagues titled "Chanting Meditation Improves Mood and Social Cohesion." I interviewed Gemma on my podcast about her research, so check it out if you're interested. So in this study, 45 inexperienced chanters, people who had chanted less than 5 times in their life, and 27 experienced chanters, so people who had chanted at least once a month for over 12 months, were instructed to sit with a straight spine, close their eyes, and chant the sound Om for 10 minutes with a recording. Half the group were instructed to chant silently, and the other half were instructed to chant vocally out loud. The result showed that chanting Om for 10 minutes had a positive effect on mood. Interestingly, positive affect increased more with vocal chanting compared to silent chanting, and that in the vocal condition, inexperienced chanters showed a greater increase in positive affect than experienced chanters. It's cool, huh? So let's take a look at this study by my colleague Michael DeManicor in Sydney, Australia. I was involved in the study as one of the so-called experts who were interviewed, and Michael and I presented on some of this work at a yoga conference a few years ago. So the study is called "Establishing Key Components of Yoga Interventions for Reducing Depression and Anxiety and Improving Wellbeing, a Delphi Method Study." So in the study, 24 senior yoga teachers who also had training and experience in mental health, myself included, were interviewed about the benefits of various yoga practices for reducing depression and anxiety. In a series of surveys, a general consensus was reached on the application of yoga for reducing anxiety and depression. And I'll go over what this was in a minute. But before I do, let's take a look at the follow-up study by the same authors titled "Individualized Yoga for Reducing Depression and Anxiety and Improving Wellbeing, a Randomized Control Trial." In this follow-up study, 15 senior yoga teachers, myself included, provided individualized yoga sessions to 101 people over a 6-week period based on the interventions outlined in the previous Delphi study. In this randomized control trial, the researchers found that usual treatment and personalized yoga was 3.6 times more effective at reducing depression and improving mental health and well-being than usual treatment alone. It worked! These were great studies to come up with a consensus on what practices are helpful for depression and anxiety and to illustrate the effectiveness of yoga for depression. So let's go back to the initial Delphi method study now and look at what the consensus was for suitable yoga practices for depression. The practices include asana, pranayama, relaxation, and meditation, as well as lifestyle recommendations. So the recommended postures for depression included coordinated flow of breath with movement, chest and heart opening, backward bending postures, and movements that focus on the inhalation, moving repetition of postures rather than long holds, dynamic sequences of postures, including sun salutations, a range of different postures, including sun salutations. There were no recommendations for asanas to avoid for individuals with depression. However, this will depend on the individual that you're working with, of course. Suggested pranayama practices included abdominal breathing, focusing on the inhalation, comfortable holding after the inhalation, and right nostril breathing, especially on the inhalation. There were no pranayama practices that were needed to be avoided for depression, no contraindications for depression. So it's good to know. But remember that many people with depression also experience anxiety. So we need to be aware of the contraindications for anxiety too. But that's in the anxiety lecture. So suggested relaxation practices for reducing depression included active focus on the physical body during relaxation, like body scan or progressive muscle relaxation, to shift the focus away from the mind and the thoughts. Relaxation practices that are done with visualizations that are positive, expansive, and energizing, like the sun or open space. And using guided relaxation techniques rather than self-directed. No specific recommendations for relaxation to avoid for individuals with depression were suggested in this research. However, note that the suggestions in the previous slide about using active and guided relaxation practices rather than self-directed relaxation practices. As when we're depressed, our minds can have this tendency to ruminate, and without something clear to focus on, individuals with depression can get caught up in a negative spiral. So it's really great to have something to focus on. Suggested meditation practices for reducing depression include mindfulness, so learning to focus attention on observing the present experience without judgment, something for the mind to do and focus on rather than just observation, like counting, repeated words or phrases, like a mantra, visualization, candle gazing, smiling heart practices, etc., and active meditations like moving, chanting, and guided visualizations. And again, there were no specific recommendations to avoid in this research. However, I'm not sure I exactly agree with this. I feel we need to avoid meditations that have lengthy silences or are self-directed, particularly with individuals who are new to yoga or meditation and have a tendency to ruminate. Longer meditations can also be very difficult if people aren't experienced in meditation, so keeping them short can be a great idea. Other components of a yoga practice for reducing depression include cultivation of positive values, attitudes and behaviors, including gratitude, kindness, compassion and forgiveness, awareness of negative sensory input, including TV, movies, music, literature, multimedia, news, formulation of meaningful affirmations and intentions, so sankalpa, visualization and symbolic imagery techniques, bhavana, and sound or chanting from any suitable language or culture, spirituality or prayer, repetition of meaningful words or phrases, mantra, and symbolic gesture, mudra. There were no recommendations of things to avoid in this category. So other components of a yogic lifestyle for reducing depression included positive relationships, developing self-empowering knowledge, social involvement and support, linking with a supportive community, sangha, lifestyle factors including diet, smoking, drugs and alcohol, sleep, work, exercise, and exposure to sunlight and natural environments, service to others including volunteer work, having a pleasing environment free from clutter with good ventilation and natural light, education about yoga teachings and the potential benefits of yoga, and group yoga classes. There were no specific lifestyle recommendations that were suggested to be avoided for depression. So this is what this research paper recommends, and many of these recommendations are included in the practices that I recommend for depression. If you're interested in reading more research and getting an academic view on yoga and mental health, I suggest checking out the book Yoga for Mental Health, which is edited by Mason and Birch. In this book, they have a chapter on yoga for depression, which is by Amy Weintraub, the author of Yoga for Depression, and Kramer. In this chapter, they offer a nice summary of the rationale for yoga, which I thought I'd share with you here. So the rationale for using yoga for depression. Yogic practices like asana, pranayama, mantra, mudra, and meditation work to anchor the ruminative mind in the present moment. Yogic practices offer a window out of the depressed mood, even if momentarily. Yogic practices support students to cultivate present moment awareness. Yogic practices increase feelings of self-efficacy and give people tools for managing their symptoms of depression, thus increasing their internal locus of control, feeling like they have control over and can affect change in their own life. Okay, my friends, that is us for this lecture on the research into yoga and depression. Now, this was only a snippet of the available research, but I wanted to give you a feel of what's out there and to see how research is conducted. I hope it wasn't too heavy going and that you enjoyed nerding out with me. I look forward to seeing you over in the next lecture.